really, really hard, and they execute the system, and that's what it's all about.
There goes.
Yes,
there
sir.
Trust.
Big trust.
Big trust.
Hey, yes, sir.
Right on cue. Hey, let me close.
We're back on another edition of the Jumbo Set podcast, brought to you as always by Jimmy's Famous Seafood, presented as always by the Exit 52 podcast. My name is Jake Luke, and I'm joined on my screen not by Spencer Nathaniel Schultz, who is still gallivanting around down in Florida, just having a grand old time, soaking up that sun and that spring weather. It's Tim Barbalace, 105.7. How are we doing tonight, sir?
I'm good. Even better that the Orioles are blowing out and winning me some money, so that works.
Look at that. Yeah, we were planning on, you know, I sent out the text a little impromptu because I didn't know what Spenny's schedule was going to be. I sent it out, you know, you're my relief pitcher coming in here in the seventh inning. I hope that arm's ready to go. And I was like, yeah, you know, 9:30 when the game wraps up. And I kind of threw in, you know, if it's a blowout one way or the other, we can get it going early. Here it is, seventh inning, and they're up 9-2. Last time I checked, here's the thing. And it seems like we got somebody ready to throw here in the background too.
Yeah, it's my dog, Zoe, who literally was not making any sound for the past 30, 40 minutes. And now maybe see someone. I don't know.
Okay.
We'll work through. All right, girl.
Yeah, we'll power through it. But yeah, how's everything been going, man? We saw each other the other night for the first time in a little while. How you been doing?
I'm good, dude. I mean, look, it's a great time of year. To be honest, I mean, the O's in full swing. We're, 9 days away from the NFL draft. Ravens just started their offseason workout program. Things are really flowing, which certainly beats the alternative. I feel like flashback a month ago when we were in the midst of spring training and, you know, that got old and we're like, all right, let's get to the real games. And, you know, Maryland, of course, had a really rough year, so. It was quiet, I guess, from a local sports perspective for a little bit there.
How do you guys like, you know, we have a little bit more flexibility at the expense maybe of not having a real studio, real budget, actual guests that we can have call in. We have maybe a little bit more flexibility as opposed to you guys. It's a lot more regimented and you're doing it much more regularly. How do you kind of spin that? How do you like gin up content when you kind of have to when things are really quiet?
I mean, I think there's where it's kind of like a brainstorming aspect to it where, you know, whether it's, you know, me, Jason, Ken in studio during a break or, you know, Ryan Schell, our producer, Ben Hall, our other producer, you know, we got a big group chat together and it's just kind of shooting ideas off each other. And, you know, we always say that from the Super Bowl till opening day, that's kind of our dead period, quote unquote, when it comes to the fam, where you do have to obviously get more creative in terms of coming up with different ideas, you know, content ideas. You know, it can definitely be tough at times. I'm not going to lie to you. And then, you know, you flash back a year, 13 months ago at this time, and we got the Lamar Jackson of it all, the contract negotiations. You got Kenny Franchise, and they're just giving us, you know, crazy story topics. You know, weren't as lucky this offseason, but that's totally fine in my book. And it's great, man. I mean, just from the O's perspective, I don't know if you feel the same way, Jake, just like, I feel like this year's draft, and I think there's multiple layers to this. I think this year's draft has a little less buzz than normal. And I think that there's kind of multiple layers for that. I mean, A, it's because the O's are, you know, came into this year with so much expectations and they're off to a good start. But also being pick 30, it's, you know, a lot tougher than when they were at 14 a couple years ago.
Yeah, it does feel like there has been a lot less buzz. And Spenny and I, you know, we used to cover Ravens specifically, and I feel like we almost had the perfect time where the Orioles started to heat back up and we came over, joined X52, and we got to cover them obviously a lot more extensively. And that has been really good because I feel like we've had off seasons like this in the past. not a ton during the Lamar era. It feels like there has been a lot of heat during draft season in prior years, but it almost feels like there's been a graduation of sorts where the Ravens stuff has kind of settled down, and it's, you know, really all Orioles right now for us for the most part. I'm sure it's kind of similar for you guys.
Oh, no, 100%. I mean, that's what's driving us now. We're still going to at least hit one or two Ravens topics a day. But, I mean, right now it's O's, man. I mean, and just you kind of go back to the fall, and that's when it's at its best, right? I mean, I remember, you know, back June, July last year, just kind of really looking forward to that September where, you know, for the first time in years – you got a Ravens team with a ton of expectations, an Orioles team that's coming down the stretch on their way to winning 101 games, winning the AL East. I mean, it was just, it was such an electric time in the city. And look, it seems like we're going to have that same thing happen again, you know, this August, this September for sure. But it's just, it's so great when both teams are really good at the same time, right? Like it makes, you know, your job easier, makes my job easier. It makes, you know, being a fan, like, and, you know, we're the same age, Jake. I mean, the thing is, like, with the O's, the unfortunate part for the majority of our lifetime, like, they've been bad, you know, and the Ravens have obviously had a lot of consistency for them, but you got the 14 consecutive losing years. Then you have 2012 through 16, which was awesome, you know, during college. And then the rebuild, and now, I mean, it just, it really feels like the start of something special. And, you know, I felt like just being out there for opening day during David Rubenstein's presser and just the branding of it all, like the next chapter. And I just think that, you know, it's such an apt name for it.
Yeah, it also feels healthy to have that like line of demarcation point where, you know, the Ravens, you know, they lose in the AFC Championship game. And obviously that sticks with you, particularly on my side as, you know, more of a fanalist, like that sticks with me for a couple weeks, but you're able to move on a little more quickly and you're able to kind of say like, all right, you know, I can turn my attention to spring training for real now. Because there were times back in like 2019 where it's like, oh, pitchers and catchers report. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, I'll see you at opening day and then we'll see how much I'm able to really, really stay hung in there. But yeah, this past season, it really was kind of that first one where they were both firing on all cylinders. And I'm reminded, ironically, because you always remember the bad times too. And it's funny to call this bad times, but I think it might've been the AL East clinch miss in maybe it was October with the Ravens going into Pittsburgh. And I think maybe the Terps even had a big game and everyone's like, oh my God, this is going to be great. It's just a clean sweep. The Ravens lose the five drops by the receivers. The Orioles get swept, I think, or something like that. And
yeah, it was, I remember being there, dude. I was at Pickles, go figure. And we were going to, that was game two of the ALDS. And we were watching the Ravens game, Ravens Steelers. And that was when they dropped 72 passes against Pittsburgh. And then, of course, you know, it was kind of a debacle at Camden Yards. Grayson didn't have it. But, yeah, man, I mean, we were down there early and just, you know, the vibes were great until they weren't.
Yeah, no, it's funny how that works. I guess, you know, this is a Ravens-focused show. So, to spin it back there a little bit, you mentioned it's been a quiet offseason. I totally agree. Derrick Henry, kind of your big marquee signing, a lot of departures. What have been your kind of just general thoughts just from a fan perspective and, you know, an analyst too, how this offseason's gone?
I mean, I would say this. I kept saying, you know, on Inside Access and you know, Baltimore Football Daily coming down the stretch of the season, just how, you know, and this is where it gets all frustrating, you know, how things really lined up for them. And it's kind of like, all right, man, like the stars are aligning, like everyone's healthy. You got the deepest roster in football. But, you know, in the back of your head that things are going to be a lot different in 2024. And, you know, I envisioned that there was going to be a lot of change, you know, from a roster standpoint, coaching standpoint, and heck, even Joe Ortiz in the front office. It was a mass exodus, but it didn't necessarily come at a surprise, or at least it shouldn't have, just considering the salary cap situation, 20 plus unrestricted free agents, the fact that you are paying a quarterback now $50 million per year. And this is never really an organization that goes out and freely spends a ton of money during free agency. That's just not their MO. But it is tough, right? Like it's hard to Kevin had me on his podcast, Kevin Ostreicher, a few weeks back. And, you know, he was kind of basically saying, like, how would you grade the offseason yet? And I was like, I mean, to be honest, man, I can't. Just because I almost don't feel like it's fair, you know, just because,
see, right? Like,
so much is still to come, where you got the draft. We know what Eric DaCosta did late, you know, in training camp, in a couple weeks into the season with Kyle Van Noy. There were just so much, like, things to come. And look, I mean, even if you're the most optimistic Ravens fan in the world, this team right now is weaker than it was against the Chiefs in the AFC Championship. But they have an extremely strong spine, and that remains intact, at least for the next 3 years, in terms of Justin Madubuike, Roquan Smith, Kyle Hamilton. That's a hell of a place to start defensively. You know, you got Lamar Jackson. You got Derrick Henry in the backfield now. Zay Flowers in year two. Now, there's still plenty of work to be done for Eric DaCosta, but, you know, it's just last offseason presented its own set of challenges for EDC in terms of navigating the Lamar of it all. But, you know, I kind of said for a while that you could almost make the argument that this offseason's more challenging, just considering all of the change that has happened.
Yeah, and I'm kind of wondering, like, I feel like this has to be a little bit of a part of it. Like, how much do you attribute to the fact that we're now in that post-contract world with Lamar?
In terms of roster building?
Yeah, I would say, you know, they I feel like in years past, you probably wouldn't see this many departures. They like to retain a lot of their guys. I mean, I'd have to think that if Lamar was still cheap, Patrick Queen might still be on this team at the very least.
Sure. That's definitely part of it. And Eric DaCosta kind of acknowledged that right when the contract was signed at that press conference, just how they'd have to go about building their team in a different way. And look, man, you could say last year, you know, part of it is the Ravens really did go for it and did some things differently in terms of adding voidable years. And now you're kind of paying the piper a little bit with some of those dead cap hits. But I think now what we are seeing, and Eric DaCosta talked about at the Liars luncheon as well, you only had 6 draft picks last year, and that's far from the norm in Baltimore. You got 9 this year. You got projected 11 next year when you throw in the 4 compensatory picks. I think this year's big set of challenge, you know, really hits Eric DaCosta in terms of they're going to need multiple guys from this rookie class to have immediate impact. Where, you know, I'm not casting an aspersion on last year's class. It's 1 year. But I'm saying from in terms of rookie production, Zay Flowers was fantastic. And, you know, Tavius Robinson was a rotation guy. And look, I'm super pumped to see Trenton Simpson this year. But you didn't necessarily get a ton out of them out of the gate, where I don't know if you're going to be afforded that luxury this year, considering all of the depth that has left this offseason. And circling back to the Lamar Jackson contract, you're going to need some of these guys on cheap rookie deals to produce.
Have you been in the room for a Liars luncheon? And if so, what goes into crafting those questions? Because it feels like it's earned its name for a reason.
Was it last week? And then I actually went the prior year, which that was
a little bit of an incident there, huh?
Yeah, that was something. but this year it was a lot more lax. Yeah, so it's kind of cool. The Ravens, they have, you know, all the media out, and it's like the one time all year where we're allowed in the cafeteria, and, you know, we eat in the cafeteria, and then we go into the auditorium. And, you know, this year it was Eric DaCosta, John Harbaugh, and prior years, of course, you had Joe Ortiz there. Yeah, I mean, last year was so interesting because of the Lamar thing, so I'm just going to throw that out. But this year, you know, I kind of asked him, you know, there were multiple things that I kind of wanted to know. Just, you know, of course, not that I would expect him to say anything, but the fifth year option question of it all, you got to get that in there. You know, I think cornerback depth, receiver depth, of course, offensive line was always going to be a big point of emphasis. But I mean, I asked Eric DaCosta the kind of point that I was making to you, Jake, just in the fact, you know, is there more pressure to get instant production out of your rookie class this year, considering the depth that has left your building? And, you know, he agreed. He definitely said, yeah, I mean, we're going to have to find ways to replace, you know, all the significant snaps that they lost. But I think, you know, a couple takeaways that I had from this year's Liars Luncheon is I was a little surprised how definitively he said that, you know, they're going to take a running back. They're going to take a cornerback. And I think, you know, a couple things, him saying that this draft isn't as deep and, you know, there's fewer draftable players than they've had in years. I think they're going to be looking to trade for some future picks like we saw a couple years ago when they did it with the Cardinals. I think they got a fourth round pick in return. I could definitely see them trying to acquire 2025 draft picks.
So yeah, a lot of really interesting directions I could go there, but I mean the cafeteria, like that feels almost like the media at Augusta National getting to play the course after the Masters. What's the number one pick there for you out of all the food they have?
Number one pick. Wow. All the food was really good. They had a really good lasagna there. They had chicken breast. They had smoothies. I mean, their vending machine was wide open. A giant salad bar. They had the soup of the day, I think, was chicken tortilla. That was pretty solid.
I love the soup guy.
I love soup. But no, I mean the cafeteria, dude. I mean, just the facility. You know, it's top notch, man. I mean, it really is. Like, and what was it, a handful of years ago when Steve Bisciotti invested another $45 million or so? I mean, every time I go in there, it really is remarkable. Just Definitely. The facility as a whole.
Yeah. So the draft, I mean, what's the one thing that you specifically look forward to covering with it? I feel like it's got to be a big event for you guys, just like it is for us.
Yeah, for sure. Last year I did the draft show with Vinny. This year Ken's going to be doing it, so it'll just be me and Jason in the afternoons, and then there's going to be Cordell, Glenn, and Rita doing a two-hour kind of pre-draft show, and then the draft show with Vinny and Ken, and there'll be a bunch of call-ins. You know, I think I'm a part of the call-in list, but no, it's just going to be fascinating what happens at 30, because, you know, Ken and I were talking about it today. Just, you know, if you're asked like, oh, who do you think they're going to take at 30? And it's like, that's 29 picks, man. Like that's so hard to tell, you know, just how, you know, the board is going to fall. But look, it's no secret. They need a lot of help on the offensive line. We know how deep this tackle class is. And in an ideal world, yeah, pick 30 is a tackle. Would it shock me if it's a corner? Would it shock me if, you know, they go in a different direction like that? No, not in the slightest. But I could easily see, Jake, them taking two offensive linemen in the first three rounds of the draft. I just think Eric DaCosta has talked ad nauseum about building up this group again. John Harbaugh used the word rebuild when talking about the offensive line at the scouting combine. So I think they're going to hit that group hard.
Definitely. Definitely. Last one before we go to the listener mailbag here. What's the number one thing that callers want to discuss right now as far as the Ravens?
Oh, God. Number one thing that callers.
Yeah, I feel like there's not a lot of outrage for them right now to call in all angry. I feel like it's a little quieter this year.
Well, it's so much quieter, dude. Like, dude, last year really just was insane. You know, again, going back to the Lamar, the total gym complete. Like, it was just
The entire gym, please.
Yeah, well, all of the gym, you know, like all of it, you know, but it was just so wild. And there was so much like vitriol from both sides, like wanting Lamar to go, wanting Lamar not to go. Look, were there, I mean, we still get people calling in complaining about the AFC championship, you know, we still get people calling in. You know, we were kind of talking about Bateman recently and fifth year options there. I mean, that would be one thing. But like I said, though, man, I mean, ever since, you know, the initial wave of free agency, a couple weeks and, you know, Liar's Luncheon, it's been a lot of O's. I mean, it's been a lot of O's, which is, you know, kind of cool to see. But like you said, no one's really, I think there was an initial shock of seeing all those free agents walk out the door. But, you know, now that that's kind of cool, not a lot to be pissed off about, you know, like there isn't a lot of polarizing things.
Yeah. Which is like we said, it's a nice thing. And it's also a little bit of a curse when the Orioles aren't doing well, but thankfully Orioles doing very well. So you guys can focus on that. So turn it over to listener questions. I didn't really vet these like I usually get to. I was kind of tied up in the O's game, you know, funny enough. So yeah, first one coming in from Poppin' Perks at C Perks One. Who is your dark horse league MVP candidate for next season? I'll start with this one, 'cause I got kind of a weird one that people might not love. I kind of like the idea of the Chargers winning like 12 games this year and Justin Herbert having a very solid kind of touchdown to interception ratio. And they're like the story of the year. And Justin Herbert, you know, wins the MVP, maybe in a similar fashion to Lamar last year, where the stats aren't super high, but they're kind of the story of the season. He's the quarterback, stays healthy, finally puts it all together. Jim Harbaugh kind of does his thing where he comes in and wins a bunch of games in year one.
I would like to see that, man. They are just such a cursed franchise. Like, and I mean, their receiving core really, really scares me. So hopefully they can add to that. But no, I like that. I like that sleeper choice. And I'm sure, like, if you looked at the odds somewhere, you probably could get some pretty good odds there. Gosh, MVP.
CJ Stroud is kind of the easy one hanging out there, but that's not even going to be dark horse. I feel like everyone's going to be all over him this year.
No, the Texans are going to be that hot, sexy team this upcoming year for sure. Just coming off the year that they did. I mean, I hate to go chalky, but like with the Chiefs, I mean, with Mahomes, it's just crazy. Now the Rashee Rice situation is a little dicey to say the least, but I'm kind of curious to see how Marquise Brown does in that offense. I think he will do well. It's just so hard to bet against them for anything. Yep. But that's kind of my very chalky, you know, not too much thought into it, but yeah.
Which is fine. You weren't prepped. And I definitely went outside the box enough for you to go chalky. So
Right.
Yeah, Mahomes wins it every other year. That could be the funny like Peyton Manning thing that we grew up with.
Yeah.
Zamboni SSB, where do you think Odell ends up? He asks Buffalo at the end of it. I think that's a solid answer with him just getting rid of Diggs. I could also see him like Miami already did their homework on him. I feel like he could maybe end up there.
I think both of those spots make a lot of sense. And I guess one of the things, I'm just curious what does Odell want at this stage of his career? He's not getting that $15 million check that the Ravens gave him last year. Does he want to go to a place where he could maybe put up numbers and maybe be more of a focal point? Does he want to go to a place where he can just win a championship, you know, and then kind of get in where he fits in? Miami was the one that kind of jumps out to me. I mean, it seemed like there was a lot of smoke there. And like you said, Jake, he already had a visit there. I can't imagine Odell is in any rush to sign. So that could be a situation where maybe this lingers a little bit, at least until after the draft. But I'd probably side Miami.
Yeah, I think that's probably an on-the-money answer. And like you said, maybe one of these teams will have an opening by training camp that he could conceivably go win that ring on. I feel like the Chiefs, you know, they could be something to watch there if the Rice thing, if they really do bring the hammer down on him. Like you said, he's not going to fetch that same price. Connor Kellerstross asks, we can kind of skip this first one because we already talked about it with the draft, but he says, besides offensive line, is there a position you think the Ravens will double dip in the draft? You know, corner would probably be my answer if we're not going to go offensive line. I think you might agree with that.
Yeah.
And then he says, there's been Twitter discussion on extending Owe, but would you want to extend Bateman, especially considering Zay is the only wide receiver on the 2025 roster? Love the pod. I don't know if I would, just because the availability really hasn't been there for him, particularly early in seasons when you need to get those reps, you need to get that physical ramp up to be able to handle the course of an 18 game season plus if you're going to make the playoffs. I'd probably just say, hey, you know what, go ahead and bet on yourself. And if you do well, maybe we'll come back to the table. If not, you know, safe travels, have a good career elsewhere.
I would agree with that. I think Bateman is, for me, such a tough player, tough situation to kind of decipher, right? Where I've kind of been saying this ever since the tail end of last year, he almost seems like a guy that would do really well in a change of scenery. Now, I don't know if that's necessarily in the cards right now, considering the lack of depth beyond him and Zay at receiver, but for whatever reason, it just hasn't panned out here. Jake, and you know, everyone sees the analytics chart of him, like most separation, like all the way here in the right side. And Jonah Schaefer did a fantastic piece of every deep throw that Lamar did this past offseason, and just how Bateman and Lamar just have not been on the same page. I mean, he's got a passer rating in the 70s when throwing to Bateman. But that being said, we've seen flashes of him. Like, it wouldn't shock me in the slightest if he went somewhere and ended up having a pretty solid career. But I don't know, dude. Like, I don't know what to make of it. You know, whether it's him being so banged up and missing practice time early on, and then when he was healthy, Lamar had COVID or Lamar was injured. Like, they just have not been on the same page.
Yeah, sometimes it's just, you know, it doesn't work out, and a change of scenery is best for everyone. Jay Taylor at Raveneers. He had a couple questions here. The one I'm most interested in is, as of today, which positions are you the most concerned about? And I will preface it by saying I am, as of today, most concerned about the offensive line, with sure. The caveat that I feel like they are going to figure it out. I feel like they're going to invest heavy in the draft, but they're probably going to, you know, fall backwards into a veteran. Maybe this Josh Jones will be that guy. Maybe they'll find another guy who's going to, you know, have some quality snaps for them over the course of a full season. But the cornerback depth is really concerning for me, and we've seen their season derailed by a lack of cornerback depth. So that's kind of the one that is really the dark horse to me that I probably am the most concerned about right now. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would agree with you. I mean, offensive line right now, you got the three openings. I think one's going to be internal. I think one's going to be a draft pick. And I think one could be that John Simpson-esque player, whether that's a Josh Jones or someone else. I'm with you on corner. It's good that they brought Arthur Millette back for sure. But if there's one move, you know, that was or wasn't made by Eric DaCosta this offseason where I'm kind of like, I don't know. I would have brought Darby back at that price, man. Sure. 2 years, $8.5 million that he went to Jacksonville. I felt like Darby was an unsung hero for this team last year. And what's big about him is that he can play outside, where Millette, that's not necessarily his bag. And Jalen Armour Davis, Pepe Williams, I mean, they just haven't been healthy. I mean, we haven't seen anything out of them, you know, for their first 2 years. So I'm with you 100% on that. Corner scares me. And I mean, stop me if you've heard this before, but, you know, edge. And look, Eric DaCosta bat 1,000 on veteran pickups last year. You know, not even Eric DaCosta could have seen Jadeveon Clowney and Kyle Van Noy combining for 18.5 sacks, but they did.
Right.
And the Ravens led the league in sacks, which is unbelievable. I mean, no one could have seen that coming. I think Owe is a very, very solid player. Very solid player. I don't think he's this 10 sack guy that, you know, I was predicting, you know, a couple years ago, but And then Van Noy, you know, does he get 9 sacks again this year? I don't know. I mean, maybe he falls back a little bit to 5-6 sacks like he usually put up. But then outside of those guys, I mean, David Ajabo, I don't know. I mean, he just hasn't played, you know, the first 2 years. And last year at training camp and preseason, I was a little underwhelmed and struggled to set the edge. And Tavius Robinson, maybe he can take a step forward in year two. But I think they need to add another guy there as well.
Absolutely. Gunner at We Got a Wiener. He had a couple here. I'm going to go with the one that I think is a little more fun and total hypothetical. But if you could trade for any wide receiver, regardless of price, who would it be? So basically just plucking any wide receiver and putting it in this offense. I mean, Justin Jefferson, I think, is the easy answer.
Yeah,
but it would be a lot of fun, I think, to see. And I've been kind of banging on this drum all offseason to see a guy like a DK Metcalf, who is just that big kind of go outside, beat a guy one-on-one, out jump him. I feel like we just haven't seen that dimension in this offense in this Lamar Jackson era. I'd love to see them go and get a guy with some size who can win jump balls.
Let me throw this at you, Jay, because coincidentally enough, we're doing a segment on this tomorrow. How aggressive should Eric DaCosta, going down this hypothetical rabbit hole, be in trying to acquire one of the guys? We know the 49ers, there's been talks about them. You got the Cortland Sutton situation going on. I've always been a big Cortland Sutton fan. And he's due like $13.5 million, I think, in base this year. He's under contract for 2025. That intrigues me. I'm not saying that it's likely to happen, but that intrigues me, and I think it's realistic.
Yeah, the health has been a concern, I would say.
For sure.
I mean, we got a couple questions about him too. Seth G28 just asks Cortland Sutton. That's all he asked. And then West Wing Raven Perp says, which receiver do you think fits better with Lamar, Ayuk or Sutton? And the Sutton thing, it's been really percolating around today. And there's been people coming out and retroactively kind of pointing back to reports that the Broncos tried to trade him to the Ravens and they just couldn't work the money out. I mean, that's the exact type of guy I'm talking about. And like, if the health were to work out, I mean, I'd be all over that. And I mean, maybe they still should be. I mean, I'd be picking up the phone if I were DaCosta, because, you know, Odell Beckham leaves and obviously he didn't make a huge impact here, but he was just kind of that steady veteran presence that they tended to lack the last couple of years, where it's like, yeah, he's not a world beater, but when you got a couple guys that are half world beaters or maybe a quarter of a world beater, that's a lot better than not having them, you know, all the way down through that wide receiver room.
For sure. You know, in terms of the Ayuk, like on surface level, yeah, absolutely. Brandon Ayuk's a hell of a player. But I think the difference for if you trade for an Ayuk or you trade for a Sutton or a Debo, you have more cost certainty with Debo and Sutton in the fact that they're both under contract this year and next. They both have already been paid. Where Ayuk, you're going to have to pay him damn near top of the market money at wide receiver. So I think acquiring one of the other two would be easier. I think Cortland Sutton would, of the three, be the easiest. I know Debo's due like over $20 million. And not to mention, man, like Denver's going to stink again. Like, I mean, they're going to want to pick up some draft capital. You know, Sutton's not in their long-term future. I just think it makes a lot of sense. But then you get to the point, all right, what could the asking price be there? What are you willing to give up if you're Eric DaCosta? And I think that's another factor to this, of course. But, you know, anyone saying, oh, $13 million, yes, that's true, and that's a decent hit. But you could tack on another year, you know, get kind of creative that way. Or we haven't seen the Ravens restructure any deals yet. You know, Lamar Jackson, boom, that's $11 million right there. You're almost covering that entire cap hit. So they could swing it if they really wanted to do it.
Yeah, and it would be really nice to see. It sucks having all the needs across the offensive line, which is such an important position for the offense. But man, it does feel like they're lacking that little bit of punch at wide receiver. And, you know, speaking of Ayuk, I mean, you're a talent within your industry, and I know you've had contract negotiations in the past. Have you ever unfollowed Odyssey on Instagram?
No, no, I haven't done that. I don't know.
Don't get yourself in trouble.
Yeah. I don't know if that's necessarily the way to go. But I mean, hey, I mean, if you're a professional athlete, I mean, it's just, that's the thing to do. I mean, everybody does.
Like it, yeah. Priya Kurtz asks, thoughts on Cam Newton's comments about Lamar? I don't know if you guys covered this. I caught a little glimpse of it. I think Cam Newton said Lamar Jackson is going to win a Super Bowl before Joe Burrow, I think was the comment. What are your thoughts on that? Very declarative statement, kind of another hypothetical, but it's just like you see these comments pop up, and I feel like they're just catnip for like a quick radio hit segment for you guys.
Oh yeah, 100%. Cincinnati is going to be so interesting this year, where last year, I mean, their defense was a dumpster fire. We know about the Joe Burrow injury. Joe needs to have a training camp. You know, yeah. Joe has not had a true training camp in his NFL career, and you've seen the horrific starts that him and the Bengals have gotten off to over the past couple of years. So they need to get Joe healthy. In terms of Lamar winning one before Joe, it wouldn't shock me in the slightest. I'm not going to, you know, say that that's a crazy statement at all. I've been saying this, though, Jake, and I'd be curious if you agree with me, and maybe this is hot takey. This is not me saying that Lamar is not going to win a Super Bowl. I firmly believe he will. But I think last year, in terms of, you know, roster, in terms of being the one seed, in terms of the Chiefs being, you know, down comparatively speaking, all of the quarterbacks getting hurt, Lamar staying healthy. I don't know if there's going to be a better, easier path with Lamar, but that's not to say that, you know, they're not going to win. Look, I asked Ray Rice, you know, this question when we had him on before, like the 2011 Ravens were the better team than the 2012 Ravens. Like there's nothing to say that the Ravens, even though they might not have as deep a roster this upcoming year, that they still can't go win a Super Bowl.
And they were a wild card in 2000. I mean, the Ravens, that's their thing with Super Bowls is they, you know, it always seems like, oh man, they had the easy path there. But then, you know, the two times they've done it, they've very much not gone the easy path with being a wild card, then being a fourth, you know, kind of that fourth seed and having to go on the road a couple times. And then you got a hot San Francisco team that you got to beat. So yeah, it's definitely one of those kind of first takey, you know, hot take kind of, you know, questions. And that soundbite from Cam is probably going to be played on all those shows and stuff. And they'll debate it until they're blue in the face. But it's interesting to me because, like, I don't know, I got a little philosophical after that AFC championship loss where people were so emotional and so fired up. And they were making that point in the moment, like, man, it's never going to be easier than that. And I don't know, man, like I just kept coming back to the fact, and maybe I'm just getting a little bit older, you know, up into my late 20s here, but I'm like, man, like life is a long time, and like never is a long time. And like, he's going to get a lot more shots at it. And some of them are going to be easier than others, but I don't know, as long as they have him and he stays healthy, I feel like they've got a shot to win it each and every single year. Same thing applies to Joe Burrow. So
without question, I am not, you know, disagreeing with that in the slightest. You know, as long as Lamar Jackson's upright and healthy, they're going to be in the mix every single year. I guess I'm just saying in terms of like, God, it was like a historic defense and like, you know, the offense was really like, it just seemed like everything. But again, they could go out next year and, you know, using your logic, like, you know, be a wild card, win three games on the road, win a Super, like that wouldn't shock me. I'm not saying that that's impossible.
You don't want to plan on that. And I get it why people get annoyed by that refrain where they're like, well, you know, like, mate, why would they even try any, you know, any offseason? I totally get like being annoyed at, but I guess my point to people is be, you know, be patient. Like, you know, it happens when it happens, and you know, maybe it won't, and life's just going to go on. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Nick at Pasta Slut NA, can you give your favorite 3 to 5 Ravens current Ravens coaches? I always love to hear you guys mention various position coaches and would enjoy your breakdown about what makes some of these guys so great. I got to give a shout out to my guy, Joe D, along the offensive line. I think he's done a great job. They've had a lot of turnover. I mean, Keith Williams is gone now. Anthony Weaver's gone. He was a favorite of mine. I'm really excited to see what we get out of Zach Orr this season. That's kind of a chalky pick, but where are you leaning?
Yeah, I mean, I think Zach Orr makes a ton of sense. It's just wild with him, man, where you go back, what, 7, 8 years, and he was a second-team All-Pro, and you look up now, and he's, what, 30, 31 in a defensive coordinator. It's like, holy crap, like, how did this happen? But I'm very interested in seeing how he does, just being a guy that's never called a defense before. I mean, look, man, there's going to be some growing pains. There were for Mike McDonald. You know, it's going to happen. But I think he's going to kind of have his own little way of things. And you could tell that he's very respected inside that locker room. You know, it was kind of funny just always seeing him so fired up on the sidelines during those Ravens Wired. And I mean, Zach Orr is definitely getting back to the chalky of it all. But I think Zach Orr is definitely the guy.
As a guy, and I'm shocked I didn't think of this, you know, right when I saw the question, but as a guy who's in the building for these press conferences, I mean, you've got to think the world of Todd Monken for giving you so much content with the soundbite that he has.
Oh my God, man. Todd Monken's awesome. he's hilarious, man. I mean, I just remember seeing him, walking from one practice. It was not that long after, you know, he got hired or introduced, and just the conversations that he's having with players, and it's hilarious, and just the raspy, like, someone get this dude a throw lozenge, like, you know, it's much better in terms of a quote than Greg Roman. You know, Greg Roman would just, like, use cliche after cliche, you know, no storm port, whatever, I don't know, just weird stuff, and you'd be like, what, like, what are we but Todd, like, he just lets it rip.
He kind of, yeah, Greg Roman, a little bit of a used car salesman vibe with him. I liked Greg as a guy, but very slick, you know, you kind of don't know what's going on between the ears there sometimes. It feels like he's maybe leading you on a little bit.
Yeah. for sure.
And then Todd Monken, it's interesting, a couple more fun ones from Twitter before we throw it over to Instagram, some rapid fire. Todd Monken does give me some Larry David vibes. I don't know if you're a Curb your enthusiasm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Carter Bibb asks, what did you think of the Curb finale? I don't know if you caught that.
I haven't seen the Curb finale yet. And full disclosure, I need to be better than this. I've seen like a bunch of random episodes. I've not watched it all the way through. I know I need to be better in that regard.
Yeah, you'll do yourself a favor. And I binge watched it leading up to the finale. And without spoiling anything for you, Carter, I really enjoyed it. They did a nice, again, no spoilers, but they kind of tied it back to the Seinfeld finale in a really fun way, and maybe even righted some wrongs there. So yeah, really enjoyed it. Our guy T Fields at EDC Burner. This is maybe a little more one for me. I don't know if you were following our AFC, you know, playoff coverage with Spenny and the milk chugging.
I did see that. Yes.
Yeah.
Didn't you get Kadri involved too?
Yeah, Kadri. I don't even know how that came together. I think he just kind of saw it and, you know, jumped into the DMs, and he was like, let me get involved in this. I think he literally brought it into M&T Bank Stadium, which feels like, you know, maybe the universe is kind of trying
That's
to tell
hilarious.
Us something.
There.
So T That's asks, funny. What would Kowser have to do to trigger another Spenny milk jug? Cycle, grand slam. I'd go cycle. The grand slam, I feel like that's going to happen no matter what. He's hitting the cover off the ball right now.
Oh, so we haven't brought it up yet. Dude, the fact that they broke out the Bongzilla, the Octobong. I was at the game last night with my friend, and he was like, dude, you got to see this, and like showed me on Twitter. I was like, holy shit, are you kidding me? Like, that like immediately brought me back to college, because me and, you know, my friend Robbie showed me it, like, one of our best friends, Tony, had that, like, the exact Bongzilla. Oh yeah, dude. I've taken quite a few turns on Bongzilla back in my day.
Yeah, but yeah, I've done many an individual one. I don't think I've ever done the teamwork one though. But
dude, the teamwork one's crazy. So there's nozzles to it, and obviously a normal beer bong, you know, you you can fit one. I know I've seen some where you can fit two. Mm-hmm. Dude, you can fit a freaking 12 pack in this shit. Like okay. a 12 pack of beer in the Bongzilla. It's wild.
That's good. Yeah. I feel like because if you were just going to do one, it, you know, everyone's kind of getting like pretty much nothing. No. If you got eight nozzles there, you really got to tend to that thing. I feel like.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Cool. Well, that does it for Twitter. Turning it over to Instagram. And I don't think we got a ton of fun ones on here. So go back to some Ravens heavy stuff. David K. Barrett, do Ravens go wide receiver first round or offensive line? You know, kind of a generic question, but he caveats it with the fact that they mentioned how much they love the OL depth of this draft. So do you think that kind of gives them a little bit more of a decision to make at the bottom of round one if they love like, you know, an AD Mitchell or one of these guys falls to them, and then they could say, you know what, we could maybe snag some guys in the second or third round here and then sign a veteran here at the offensive line and, you know, just draft another wide receiver in the first round for Eric DaCosta.
It's possible, but I'm going to bring up something that I'm sure is going to get me a lot of hate, but I mean, that logic could a trade back be in the cards, you know, early second round. To get one of those offensive linemen. And, you know, Eric DaCosta was saying at the presser that he basically put it out there like, dude, it's going to be a premium for you to hop up to 30 to get that fifth year option. And we saw the Ravens go to 32, of course, for Lamar Jackson, but they gave up a future second round pick. So I think that's a possibility. But I don't know, man. I still think they're going O-line multiple times in the first three rounds. That's just a gut feeling. I don't know anything.
Yep. Our guy Joe knows the spot. Joe Brendel, most unlikely draft trade partner. I mean, that's an interesting, like, obviously within the division, you don't see that a ton. You do a little bit towards the back end of the draft.
It happened with the Browns for Voorhees.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, and Michael Campanaro back in the day.
Yeah, yeah, I'm like, yeah, yeah, good point.
For all our diehards. I mean, it'd be interesting if they were to trade with the Chiefs again, because they did that with Orlando Brown, and obviously, like, the compensation was a little weird, but, you know, you get a first-round pick from him that turns into Owe. I don't know. I just feel like maybe they're kind of done with giving the Chiefs any edge here to beat them again. At least I hope that's the case.
Yeah, the Chiefs would definitely be a surprise, but I mean, I guess theoretically, you know, if they wanted to hop in front of the Niners or, you know, like,
and they're so close, it'd be a quick swap and like a fourth rounder. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you. The Chiefs would be weird. I mean, I'm thinking back in the day, but you know, and the Ravens and Patriots rivalry was nuts. That never would have happened because they did not like each other. Yeah, but outside the division, I guess it would be the Chiefs for me as well.
Yep, definitely. ZJ Batman.
Maybe the Titans.
Titans, yeah. That would have been
interesting. Especially with the Derrick Henry situation last trade deadline.
Yeah, I can't imagine they're too pleased with them right now after all that. That's another one for sure. ZJ Batman, thoughts on what you'd like to see from a third safety, whether a draft pick or a signing? I kind of want them to try and just get another Geno Stone light, who kind of felt like a Marcus Williams light and was outproducing Marcus Williams as far as interceptions went. I don't know how you feel about that.
Oh yeah, I definitely, dude, the thing with Marcus is part of me, I feel so bad for him because it's like the dude never got hurt prior to coming here. And then his first 2 years here, he's had serious injuries. And, you know, you commend him for playing through that pec last year, but you could tell that bothered him all season long. And we haven't seen that ball hawking ability that we saw the first two games of his Ravens career when he got three picks. But, I mean, I know he's kind of transitioned more to nickel, but one of the guys that I've always kind of liked and have pulled for is our Darius Washington. Mm-hmm. You know, he's more of a nickel at this point, but I remember when he first came in, they were kind of working him a little nickel, a little safety. Like, he's shown some of that ability, you know, during training camp. But, you know, I felt like early on this year, he was getting a lot of run. Then he got hurt again because, you know, injuries have really messed him up. But, yeah, third safety, it's definitely a low key, like maybe you could see them draft one in the fifth round or so, you know, just to get that depth, because they really don't have that right now.
Yeah, pretty much. Priya again on Instagram. Do you think our starting guards are already in house?
Maybe. I think one definitely. Yeah. It's now or never for Ben Cleveland. If you're Eric DaCosta, you're hoping that he has a Ben Powers type year. You know, standout final season, gets paid elsewhere. You get the compensatory pick. Thanks. You know, appreciate it. And then there's a lot of buzz for Andrew Voorhees, man. And I can't say with a ton of because, dude, we haven't seen this guy on the practice field at the NFL level. So I think going into the season or OTAs or whatever, kind of with him as your number one, it doesn't make much sense. But would it shock me if maybe he goes out and earns one of those gigs? No, just based on, you know, all the stuff that we're hearing. But one, definitely. Two, possibly.
Yeah, and they've got the pieces. You mentioned Cleveland, you mentioned Voorhees, and they really liked what they saw out of Saleh when he was kind of first starting to practice there last year. So he's a guy who it feels like every couple of years they just get kind of this random guy that comes out of nowhere and wins one of these starting guard spots or maybe even tackle. So, yeah, plenty of guys to watch. I think he's one of them, and the other two guys you mentioned as well. I think one definitely is the right answer there. I think they're going to place their faith in one of these guys and just kind of hope that it works out, and then they're going to invest heavily in the other spot and tackle. Nico LaFerrera, best case scenario for the Ravens on draft night. Now, I hadn't really thought about this much because I haven't even thought that much about the draft, but man, you mentioned the idea of trading back. I'm kind of into it. If you can get a lot of picks, trade back, maybe pick a couple guys within, you know, that second night, rounds 2 and 3, and really give yourself a chance to get guys who could be starting on this football team, maybe a couple developmental pieces. Like, I don't know. There's just a lot of space to fill here. And if you can get more than, you know, your 9 draft picks, that's a lot for some teams. But I mean, we've seen the Ravens pick like 15 guys in 1 year in the past. So I feel like trading back, whether it is round 1 or round 2, you trade back further into round 2, you pick up some more pieces. I just like the idea of accumulating a little bit more of a war chest than what they've got right now.
I'm with you. And I think it is very intriguing if you were to trade back, you know, get that 2, get, you know, another maybe 3 or so, get that draft capital where, who knows, maybe you could end up swinging a trade for a player with one of those day 2 picks for, you know, some of the guys that we've been talking about so far. But it's also, you know, DaCosta was talking about how he wants more picks, but he wants more picks in a certain part of this draft. And, you know, reading between the lines, maybe it is kind of that mid-tier, you know, 2, 3, 4 type of draft position, because, you know, he was critical of just the draft's depth and, you know, looking for future picks. So, yeah, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me in the slightest, you know, if they ended up going that route.
He says that, but this man in this franchise, like you talk about the liar's luncheon, this franchise loves the 4th round like more than some people love their spouses.
Yes. Dude, I mean, 6 4th round picks. I mean, that's enough said. That's insane.
Yeah, and it's like they're finding starters there too. I mean, you go back to the, you know, where they snag Tavon Young. That's where they get Isaiah Likely. It feels like they always, when they do that, they at least get one guy who's like a real piece on the roster. So that's something I could definitely see happening. Last couple we got here, I'll kind of mash them together because I feel like they go hand in hand. AJ Hay, one, pass rusher or offensive line, more of a priority in the draft. And then Nico comes back with, what would you specifically want the Ravens to do at 30 ideally?
I mean, I got to go offensive line now, especially since they brought back Kyle Van Noy. You know, I already talked about how edge definitely is still a concern for me, but I think offensive line's the more pressing need when you get 3 wide open spots. And it's also this, man, where ideally what I would love to see at 30 is they get a tackle. They get their left tackle of the future, because let's be honest, Ravens left tackle of the future is not on their roster right now. Their left tackle in 2025 is not on their roster. So if you could bring in a guy, have him start at right tackle this year, or if Ronnie was to go down, or, you know, in a pinch, move him over. But bring in a tackle at 30, you know, have him start as a rookie, whether that's at right tackle or maybe transitions. But, you know, be sure that your left tackle of 2025 and beyond is here after the draft.
Absolutely. I think that's a good point. I mean, it's just like they are in a really weird spot with Stanley there that you alluded to. And obviously good on him for taking that pay cut and everything. Okay. But even for doing that, I mean, you know, it still kind of leaves a lot of questions out in the air there, because, you know, what we've seen on the field, it's been good at times, mostly average. And obviously it all goes back to that injury, which is tough. But, you know, sometimes situations like that happen, and he's made $100 million or thereabouts in salary already in his career, not counting endorsements. I think he's going to do okay, just fine. He signed that deal. He's good to go. It really is time to start planning for the future. And I think in a couple weeks here, we'll be seeing what their vision is for it. Just like they said at the start of the offseason, we are going to rebuild this offensive line. They've torn it down here, but they haven't really started laying the cement or the bricks quite yet. So we're going to have to see what the plan is there on draft night.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why that was just one of the big, you know, I keep going back to Harbaugh saying rebuild in terms of the offensive line, and Eric DaCosta talking about the importance of the offensive line so many times. It's been such a theme. And now it's about action. You know, now it's about bringing in some guys that can come in and contribute, because I firmly believe that they're going to have a rookie starting on the offensive line this year.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well, that's all we got for questions. And that, sir, is all I have for you. Thanks for hopping on here, a little impromptu. Like I said, you came in the ninth inning there, a little Felix Bautista at you, three down. Hope you had fun.
Yeah, I hope it didn't blow the save. thanks, man.
No, definitely not. Before we get you out of here, how about you you plug your stuff that you got going on with the station? Orioles heating up. How about you plug your social media a little bit? Let the people know what Timmy B has going on.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, really any social media platform, at my name, Tim Barbalace, Barbalace. 2 to 6 on Inside Access, Monday through Friday. Baltimore Football Daily's done until Orioles are done. That's my solo Raven show from 6 to 7, but that won't be back till hopefully following a World Series by the Orioles. We're going to really start ramping up the draft coverage, you know, especially draft day. It's going to be a big day at the Fan from, you know, 6 a.m. with the Big Bad Morning Show through our draft show with Vinny and Ken. And who knows? I would like to hopefully get a couple fill-ins on our BetQL network. That was a lot of fun last year. So maybe keep an eye out for that. Maybe I'll post something about that.
Absolutely. Well, he is the man. You all should go follow him and check out what he's got going on. Thanks again for hopping on with me. Like I said, thank you all for listening. If you liked what you heard, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on YouTube. Go ahead and leave a comment in the algorithm to help get our name out there. You can find us on social media at Exit 52 Podcast across the board. That's Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. I am at Jake Luke. That's LOUQUE. Spencer is at Ravens 4 Dummies. That is the number 4. In the middle there, you can also find Eric at EDITTI22, Brian at Barstool Banks, and Taylor at Taylor Smythe 10. They've got an episode coming out either today or tomorrow as well. So keep an eye out for that. Thank you guys again, and we'll talk to you very, very soon.
The execution system, and that's what it's all about.
Oh, God.
Yes, sir.
Trust.
He's pretty
big trust. Big trust.
Hey, yes, sir.
Right on cue. Hey, let me close.